to compete with the Garmin watches.
All right.
So, yeah.
So it tracks your heart rate and everything all
the
time?
Yeah, I mean, regular Apple Watch does that too, but okay. This one, it's a longer battery. It's got some other features like depth, like if you're in the water temperature.
Mm-hmm. Are you a diver?
No, but I do swim a lot.
Okay. That's cool.
I swim. I mean, I got a triathlon a couple years ago.
Okay.
So I'm in the water often. Mm-hmm. And sometimes I don't have to know the water temperature, but it helps.
I'm sure. It gives you a sense.
Yeah, it gives you a sense.
Is it my feeling weird or is this water
different? Yeah, or it's like, all right, why am I going so slow? Okay. Or why do I feel fast? Like, it's temperature plays a lot in like the speed in which you swim.
Well, especially if you know your body.
If you know your body.
Yeah.
And then, so, long distance running and super long bike rides.
Okay.
This is a new watch that can.
All right. So, first governor to compete in the Madison Triathlon? Or?
I guess that would be the case. I did Ironman last year.
Okay. Where? Yeah. Where at?
Here.
Oh, you did the Madison?
I did Madison Ironman last year.
Okay.
Yeah. I didn't want to bring it up. I didn't want to bring it up. I try not to. But if it comes up, I have to talk about it.
We'll keep this in the memory banks for down the road.
We've got this on record.
Yeah, my goal, I just wanted to be under 13 hours. I did 12 and a half, so.
Cool.
Feeling good.
All right.
But now I think I could get under 11.
Got the stick.
That's the next goal, but now I don't know how that works with the timeline.
Yeah. Do you lose energy over the course of a campaign, or does it
like? Well, you just don't have time to train. I can't train for that kind of race. It takes so much time to train. I was just talking to somebody about this yesterday. And it's like you lose everything. You mm-hmm. lose personal time. You lose personality. Mm-hmm. It's just like I lost a lot of myself just because, I'd be out. I see like 10 o'clock approaching. My friends be out. They wouldn't even, it's not like we were out late. But if we were at a bar, like just kind of talking, hanging out, like after a game, I see 10 o'clock approach. I'm like, I got to leave. I have to go. I have to be out of here. Mm-hmm. Now they're out to, it's midnight, not super late, but I had to be super diligent just because, one, the race costs so much, mm-hmm. and two, it's like if I do it, I want to do a good job, and like there's so many just small factors that could change everything, and I didn't want to mess up one night, and then it gives me leeway, and I'm like, all right, what's another night? Mm-hmm. Another night won't hurt, or just start getting off track, and I needed to.
It's interesting because it sounds like the athletes that talk about like sleep training and like all like the just of like how they have to like factor in 24/7 like they are preparing for
sure. And like I didn't do the sleep training, but I did, it was 8 hours for sure, because I mean you got to get 8 hours. You really need more because you're just doing so much. Mm-hmm. And it's 2-a-days too, right? Most days are two activities, like you'll swim in the morning, run in the afternoon, or bike, but it's always, for the most part, two activities a day.
All right.
We're good?
We're good.
Yeah.
All right. Mandela Barnes, thanks for coming in.
For sure. Thank you so much for having me.
So for voters who may not be as familiar with you, introduce yourself and say, why are you running for governor?
Absolutely. I'm Mandela Barnes, former lieutenant governor, former state rep, running for governor because we find ourselves in a critical moment here in the state of Wisconsin, all across the country, but Wisconsin has certainly been impacted. We see rising costs, which is no different from other states. But when people are having such a hard time to pay for groceries, to live in their homes, to be able to afford their utilities or even healthcare, we need leadership that's gonna reject the status quo and actually get to work to solving our problems. And this is more than just about bold leadership to take on Donald Trump. We need bold leadership that's going to provide solutions. And I'm running because we need to provide real relief. And my time in the legislature, my time as lieutenant governor, has been focused on making life better for people across Wisconsin. It has been focused on improving quality of life. And that's why I'm ready to get to work to lower costs on the very first day.
Is there a single issue that's driven you in your career, or maybe a lane within the party that helps define who you are?
Well, there are a number of issues. I honestly think about challenges, situations, circumstances that I've dealt with, growing up. Unfortunately, I lost friends to gun violence. And that was one of the biggest things that actually made me think about public service. Who was gonna step up? Who was gonna answer the call? And when we have these conversations about crime, we have these conversations about violence in general, like it speaks to me personally, because this wasn't just a one-off. It was my freshman year, I remember losing my first friend, lost more after that as well. And I think about, you know, how do we address these, you know, situations? Because it keeps happening. Now, my situation isn't unique. It's not isolated. There are far too many people who've had to deal with this, but we've seen far too few solutions. And ultimately, you know, growing up, I didn't necessarily think about public service. You know, the household I grew up in, y'all saw the commercials. My mother was a public school teacher. My dad worked third shift on an assembly line. Of course, I want to ensure that we have an economy that works for everybody. I want to ensure that every child has at least the same opportunities that I grew up in. As a proud public school graduate, I want to ensure that our schools are fully funded and our children can go to school without the threat of gun violence. And with that being said, you know, I would look around and say, well, who's actually responding to this crisis? Who's actually ready and prepared to step up to do something? And it's not that people weren't. It's just that not a lot of people carried that personal experience. I hope nobody ever has to experience it. But for those who have, I hope that they know that they can use their voice to step up into positions of leadership and actually be an advocate to show up and fight for what's right.
How much money are you going to need to raise in order to win this primary and then the election?
An obscene amount of money, which is the worst part about politics. There's far too much money involved. I think about, you know, the amount of spending that's not just from candidates, but also from super PACs. And it feels as if everyday people don't have a voice in politics. I'm proud of, you know, my previous campaigns where, you know, we were grassroots funded. We didn't take corporate PAC money, not a dime of corporate PAC money. And I look at this race and that's the same case. We're not taking corporate PAC money, but it is going to take about $50 million on the candidate side for me to raise. And it shouldn't be that way. But if we don't come out successful, we'll never be able to get big money out of politics. And we're looking to have a grassroots funded campaign, a people power campaign. And ultimately, our goal has to be ethics reform to ensure that everyday people, that regular Wisconsinites, get to have their voice heard in politics and feel as if their participation matters, because so many people are checked out. They feel that their voice doesn't matter because of the gross amount of spending that happens. And they think, unfortunately, well, what do my thoughts even mean in the grand scheme of things if you have all these interests that get to dump virtually unlimited sums of money into the political process? Is something that has to change.
You're no stranger to competitive primaries. So what's the difference for you between negative campaigning against a member of your party versus just defining differences between candidates?
Well, I have zero interest in negative campaigning against any of my opponents. My focus, as I mentioned, has been and will continue to be on November. And I say this, I have a lot of friends in the race. I respect everybody in the race. I think everybody brings something to the race. But I'm running based off of my experience. My time in the legislature, my time as lieutenant governor is unmatched in this primary. I've been every single county my first year as lieutenant governor, continued to make my rounds across the state every year after. Even out of office, I've had the great fortune and opportunity to be able to travel the great state of Wisconsin, just meeting with people, just, you know, existing, living, getting to enjoy the rich natural beauty, get to spend money at our small businesses and just spend time in communities. And with that being the case, I think about the work that I have put in, and, you know, some folks may say, oh, Mandela's got the name recognition. Well, I got the name recognition because I've shown up. I've been there, especially when times have been hard for Wisconsinites, whether it was storm damage tours or even when we were navigating the complexities of the pandemic. And ultimately being able to help deliver results in terms of ensuring that Wisconsin had one of the most successful bounce backs in the entire country post-pandemic, or even our small business tours, where we provided grants and relief, expansion of broadband programs, rural prosperity initiatives, violence prevention initiatives, and resources and funding for cities like Milwaukee. I'm proud of that work, and proud to have been a part of that work. Proud to have been a partner to Governor Evers through two budget cycles, where, you know, we got to outline our priorities to help rescue Wisconsin, to bring us back from 8 years of hardship before us.
When voters are looking at this broad field of candidates, do you think they should look for who connects best with them on the issues, or should they be thinking about electability?
Well, I think people should be looking at who is going to fight for them, who's going to show up, who's not going to take a no for an answer, who's going to be bold, and who is going to drastically work to improve quality of life regardless of where you live and regardless of who you vote for. I've been committed to this work. I will remain committed to this work. As I said, even out of office, I've helped elect Democrats up and down the ballot. I have helped with a number of initiatives and actually led my own initiatives to lower energy costs and utility bills for people across the state through an organization called Forward Together Wisconsin. And now I'm in this race because Wisconsinites are in real need of relief. We are in real need of solutions. And I think that ultimately, experience does matter. I am the person in this race who will be ready to govern on day one. I am the person who is ready to fight like hell for you, again, regardless of who you voted for, and I'm ready to show up to make sure that our schools have the full funding that they deserve. Our public schools get the resources that they need so that communities aren't going to referendum every single election cycle, putting that burden on property taxpayers. I'm ready to make sure that we usher in a new era of energy freedom, where Wisconsinites are generating their own energy instead of spending all our money out of state on coal that is ultimately making people less healthy and costing us much more money with each passing month.
So most of the candidates have connections to either Milwaukee or Madison. What is your outreach plan for the rest of the state, for rural Wisconsin?
Well, I can tell you there's not a person in this race who has the experience in all parts of Wisconsin that I have. In 22, I won the Wisconsin Farmers Union Friend of the Family Farmer Award because of my dedication to rural Wisconsin. I ran into a guy leaving that conference a few years ago and said that he never thought that he'd be voting for a guy from Milwaukee based on his rural policy. And also understanding that rural Wisconsin isn't just farms. It is small businesses that make up rural Wisconsin. It's also the outdoor activities that bring tourism to rural Wisconsin. And we need to ensure that that landscape is strong and is preserved and funded for years to come, because the more that we invest in whether it's tourism or outdoor recreation, that money comes back, you know, hand over fist. Like, it is a significant investment. We get a significant return from that investment, I should say. It's something we should be proud of. People look at Wisconsin as a place to come and visit, and that's something we should protect, and it's something we should be able to figure out, even in a bipartisan way, to expand. We're talking about places that are represented by Republicans, places that are represented by Democrats as well, that are some of the most beautiful spaces in this entire country, if not this entire world. And people want to see it. And I want to ensure that we're putting Wisconsin on the map. I want Wisconsin to be the best possible state, not for you to just visit, but to live, work, and raise a family. I do believe that that reality is possible, but it takes, you know, having had that experience that I've had going across Wisconsin, talking to people from all different backgrounds, all different walks of life, and figuring out what those best solutions are to improve things for everyone.
What do you think the impact of Donald Trump will be on this election?
Yeah, well, people are dissatisfied. People were lied to. People have been lied to. He lied the first time around, but people are feeling those lies a whole lot more. He called affordability a hoax. The person that's struggling to pay their utility bills right now, I don't think that's a hoax. People who are struggling to stay in their homes, they don't think that's a hoax. People who are going to see their healthcare premiums rise, who are going to see their healthcare premiums balloon, it's not a hoax to them. And for the president of all people, most powerful person in this country, most powerful person in this world, to dismiss their concerns when they voted for him based on his pledge, his promise to get it under control, that's something that's not just, you know, not sitting well with me. That's something that's not sitting well with a majority of his voters, and certainly the people who, you know, didn't vote for him. But he lied to everybody. And there's something very sick and very gross about that. We deserve so much more. We contribute so much to this country as a state. We feed this country. We build this country. We make the parts that power this entire world. And we should be respected as such. And this complete dismissal of our realities, of our lived experiences, is something that ultimately those who pledge loyalty to Donald Trump versus loyalty to the state of Wisconsin, they're gonna feel that impact. And that's why this campaign isn't just about me running for governor, me winning the race for governor. This is about ensuring that we have a majority in the state assembly and the state senate to actually do right by the people, because the will of the people should be the law of the land, and we're gonna ensure that it is.
You just referenced it, but as governor, you could have a Democratic legislature behind you. In that case, what's AB1? What's the first bill you want to sign?
Well, as I said, the first priority is Badger Care expansion. Right away, day one, special session if necessary. I refuse to sign a state budget that does not include Badger Care expansion if we have not already gotten to that point. We're one of nine states. We are one of nine states that has yet to expand our Medicaid program under the Affordable Care Act. It's a travesty that that is not the case. Republicans in the legislature have denied people the care that they deserve. And for the life of me, cannot understand why. Look at states like Louisiana. They actually did it through former Governor John Bel Edwards did it through executive order. His Republican predecessor, you know, when you sign an executive order, the risk you run is that your successor can actually overturn that executive order. His Republican successor has not overturned that executive order that expanded their Medicaid program. And it's because he knows that his constituents, his voters, rely on that Medicaid expansion. They rely on that support, or else they will be priced out of care. So for the last, it'll be 17 years now, Republicans have done a disservice, not just to people in Milwaukee and Madison as they want to make it seem. They've done a disservice to their own voters. And that dereliction of duty shows how unfit they are for office. Tom Tiffany was in the legislature. He could have voted to expand Medicaid. He could have shown some leadership if he truly cared about costs for people in Wisconsin. And it's another reason why this election is so important. Even voting to force the vote in Congress for the ACA premiums, it shows a dismissal of the actual concerns that people have. And if you're dismissing the concerns of people in a state before, as a candidate, if you're dismissing the real concerns of people in Wisconsin, then how can you see yourself fit to actually serve the people when they've told you exactly what's important to them? What would improve quality of life? What would help them out? What would effectively be a lifeline for so many people? And you refuse to throw that lifeline, it shows that you just might not be ready for leadership.
Conversely, though, there could be Republicans in charge of at least one chamber of the House. So what's your track record for working across the aisle?
Yeah, I mean, even out of office, I've been working with a bipartisan group on democracy reform because there are a lot of folks, sometimes both sides of the aisle, who, may make comments, may say certain things, or, we've seen these issues, obviously January 6th, but other instances where people call into question integrity of elections and campaigns. And with a bipartisan group, we've worked to instill more confidence in the electoral process. We've worked with local electoral officials, election officials, I should say, excuse me. We've worked with bipartisan groups of lawmakers to strengthen our democracy. I'm happy to work with whoever. My goal is not just to be representative of the Democratic Party. My goal is to represent the state of Wisconsin and the issues that are important to the people that live here, and advancing an agenda that helps to make things better, make things easier for people in this time of crisis. The fact is, partisanship has taken us down this road that has effectively left far too many people behind. And in this moment, people are calling for leadership, not party leaders. And until we have that sort of understanding, things may just get tougher for people. We need to usher in a new era of leadership that is responsive to people over party.
Right now, the Public Service Commission is looking at billions of dollars of rate increases, and there's data center proposals. How would you like to address those issues?
Well, I can tell you, we need to have a real tough look at the PSC, but unfortunately, we see PSC commissioners who have been, have been a little bit hesitant, because they saw what happened when somebody took a bold stance. When Tyler Huebner, right, he quote unquote got out of line and Republican state senators fired him from his position, all because he dared to stand up for the people of Wisconsin and do the right thing. There are PSC commissioners that don't want to see a similar fate, who want to do the right thing. But if they're not in those seats, they can't do the right thing. They can't do anything. And so I think that it is important, again, for us to have a majority in the state legislature, both houses specifically, but especially the state Senate, who has that ability, unfortunately, to control the fate of certain people in certain appointed positions. And we need leaders who are there who are going to be committed to ensuring best case scenario for ratepayers. And it is my goal, you know, these positions are every 6 years. I think the next one isn't up until 2030. With that being the case, I want to ensure that whoever is filling the seats on the Public Service Commission is going to have a real dedication to keeping costs low for people, and also ensuring that we have the most options in terms of renewable energy. It's a resource here that we have an opportunity to invest in. As I mentioned before, a significant portion of our energy generation comes from coal. There are no coal hills in Wisconsin. You know, there's no oil here for people to drill, but there are resources, and it's hard to say it on today, or, you know, it's hard to say it on a day like today, but there is sun, and we do have opportunities with wind energy. Iowa, Republican-controlled state, they've gone all in on wind. And I do believe that there are not just opportunities for wind and solar, but also geothermal, something, you know, some larger industrial or even, you know, at the scale of a school district and school building. They're investing in it because it saves money and it provides a significant return at a time where people are trying to cut costs or finding ways to be able to save money.
What about data centers?
Yeah, so data centers, it's important for us. If they are going to be built here, there has to be a community benefits agreement. If they are to come, that means ensuring that there's local hiring. That means ensuring that utility rates are not going up for customers. It also means ensuring that community input is prioritized. There shouldn't be data center construction if there's mass opposition from the communities that they are going to go in. And this also means addressing concerns like water quality. And some of this is comes down to messaging too. Some of this comes down to research and making sure that the facts are out there for people. Nobody wants to feel like they're being taken advantage of, especially after we've had a Foxconn here in Wisconsin. People have felt let down, people have been frustrated, and there are those who may say, well, yeah, these data center operations feel sort of similar. It feels as if they're coming into my community and I don't have a say-so. And when people feel like they don't have a say-so, when people feel powerless, that effectively makes people lose trust and faith in our democracy. And if we lose the faith and trust in democracy, then what are we as a state? Who are we as a country? So it's important for any operation that looks to construct a data center to have input and support and buy-in from the community that they're going in. And a community benefits agreement is a broad-based approach that gets us to a point where there is a level of agreement before that construction happens. But we can't just have, you know, communities that feel as if they're being taken advantage of.
When it comes to public education, is it just a matter of funding, or does there need to be an overhaul?
Oh man, there's so much in public education. But we haven't reached our two-thirds funding pledge that the state is technically mandated to provide for public schools. I talk about my public school experience. My public school was a challenged public school. And I've said before, there's no such thing as a failing school, just a failed community. If we have students who are showing up to school hungry, people who are, you know, students who are showing up to school homeless, like there was at one point, at least in the last 10 years, could still be the case. I haven't seen recent numbers, but 1 in 9 Milwaukee public school students were homeless. This is within the last 10 years. It could still be the case now. Could even be worse. If our students aren't showing up to school on level playing field, that creates a significant disadvantage that dictates educational outcomes. Now, we have world-class K-12 education right here in the state of Wisconsin. But if you were to go to some of these school buildings and go 3 to 5 miles down the road, it's a completely different story. And it's not because of the brick and mortar of that school building. It is about what resources one community has versus another. I believe that every school in the state of Wisconsin can be a world-class school, but it takes the investments. We can't compare students who have every single need met versus those who have hardly any needs met. We have to invest in the whole child. And that's the kind of overhaul that I'm looking at, ensuring that all of our students are fed, all of our students are housed, all of our students have the health care, mental and physical health care, and make sure that all they have all their needs met. So when they're showing up to school, they are ready to learn. So that when they go home, they have a foundation that retains the education that they got in that school building. Until we start looking at complete outcomes for all of our children, then the conversation about is it funding, is it not funding, it's immaterial.
What would you like to see done with the voucher system?
Yep, it all comes down to accountability. That's the most important thing we can do. That has to be paramount. We have to ensure that there are structures in place that don't create a playing field where some schools operate by one set of rules and another set of schools operates by a different set of rules. Any public funding should come with public accountability. And that's the bottom line.
Over the course of the last year, we've seen the Wisconsin Supreme Court strip back a lot of legislative oversight in the rulemaking process, and some claim that's unbalanced now. What would you like to see done? Do you think there needs to be some more legislative oversight, or are you happy with the way it stands now?
Well, sometimes we see politically charged or politically motivated, what effectively feels like witch hunts, as I mentioned with the PSC, as I mentioned with now Senator Brad Paff, who was the Secretary of Department of Agriculture, Trade, and Consumer Protection. And legislative oversight is necessary. I don't believe that all the power should rest in the executive branch. I feel, of course, there should be a balance. But too often, you have those who are leading legislative chambers who feel as if they want to have even more power than the executive just because the executive is not a member of their party. If you remember, in 2018, right after we were elected, Governor Evers and myself, they went into special session to take away power from the Attorney General's office. They went into special session to take away power from the governor's office. That was politically motivated. That wasn't based in fundamentals of democracy. So if it's politically motivated, no, we have to pump the brakes there. But if we're actually talking about strengthening democracy, I'm all for it.
When it comes to local funding for local governments, what needs to happen there from a state level?
Well, there's long been a funding flaw that has made it more difficult for municipalities to be able to get the resources or even the money that goes to Madison to come back at the same rate. This has been an issue in Milwaukee. That's why we've seen the raise in sales tax in the city of Milwaukee and Milwaukee County. But that didn't change the formula. The percentage is still the same. So effectively, there's even more money coming in. But at a time also when people are feeling the pinch, at the grocery store or anytime they're at any checkout counter, now we have this increased sales tax, which is making it even harder for people. But the reason that is the case is because Madison has failed and the legislature has failed to actually implement a real solution to make it easier for municipalities to get the support they deserve. And that we're going to be convening a group of local elected officials, of mayors very soon to be able to have this conversation, have this discussion in a real way. I have not served in local office. At one point, I was a receptionist in Mayor Tom Barrett's office, but I've never served in local office. And I'm not going to sit here and claim to be an expert on local government funding and financing. But I do want to come to a solution with those who are managing city budgets every single day to be able to provide the best solution to ensure that city services go on, especially at a time like this, right? We had an earlier snow than usual, and some communities, snow plows were a little bit late. And it's because government and cities and some counties have been unable to hire the people they need to be able to get out on the streets to keep our roads safe and clear.
Right now in northern Wisconsin, there's multiple mining operations where they're doing drilling to look at future mine potential. The mining law was changed before you came into office. Do you think that mining law is good, or would you like to see any overhaul there?
Well, again, we need to ensure that there are environmental protections. We can look at this the same way as we had that data center conversation. There has to be community buy-in and community input for people who have, made their homes in an area, 20, 30 years, passed down generation to generation. I think that folks should have some input on what happens in their backyard. And all I'm saying is have the conversation. That's the important part. We've gotten away from having the conversation. Like, some people don't want to have conversations because they can be difficult, right? I think the difficult conversations are probably the most necessary ones to have. So when we have those times where mining may come up in a part of the state, we'll talk to the community. Like, let's talk it out, because only thing that happens is more resentment if that conversation doesn't happen.
Do you have any concerns about your own safety in this political environment?
Well, we are in a politically charged environment, and it's kind of hectic out there. I had, I had threats before that were, made to me. It's not a fun thing to experience. And it's always back of mind, But I can tell you, like, I'm focused on doing what's right. I'm going to continue to stay focused on what's doing right. Violence is absolutely a problem. It's an issue. It's something that we cannot ignore. But I can't let that slow me down either.
What's your plan to increase affordable housing?
So the plan to increase affordable housing is to ensure that we put a stop on corporate monopolies that are buying up wholesale properties. This is going on in Milwaukee. These monopolies are making it difficult for first-time homeowners. These monopolies are making it easy, or excuse me, making it more difficult for people to be able to afford rent, because if they own all the properties, they can price people out or just charge whatever they want to charge, and where else are people going to go? And that's the first thing we got to do.
When it comes to the Department of Corrections plan that Governor Evers has in place, would you keep that going forward?
Yeah, to speak specifically about the plan.
His plans to shut down Green Bay eventually and build new facilities or overhaul some facilities, but not build a brand new corrections facility.
Yeah, so with Green Bay, I know that there are a number of safety concerns, structural concerns, of course. I mean, we can't have people, or even whether you're a person who's housed at that facility or a person who's working at that facility, we can't have people in substandard conditions. So the overhaul of smaller facilities, more regional facilities, I think that might get us to a place where we can more effectively rehabilitate people. And that has to be our baseline as well, ensuring that rehabilitation actually happens.
What would you like to see in terms of Wisconsin's abortion law?
Well, Wisconsin's 1849 criminal abortion ban, it shouldn't be in place, for one. This is something that came at a time where women couldn't vote, you know, black people couldn't vote. There were a lot of people who were kept out of democracy when we had our 1849 criminal abortion ban, which should be immediately disqualifying on its face. And that law was triggered by the Dobbs decision. And I would love to see this country get back to a pre-Dobbs era, because Roe was the law of the land that was generally accepted by Democrats, of course, but even Republicans who didn't necessarily like abortion, wasn't their thing, Roe was sort of a compromise for them and something they felt comfortable with.
All right.
Wow, last question.
That was actually the last question. Mandela Barnes, thanks for coming in.
For sure, thank you so much.
All right. That was perfect timing.
Perfect timing.
All right, thank you so much. Really appreciate it.
Thank you.
Remember, you're still